Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
It is time to tee it up on this wonderful weekend. And before we hit on the AT&T Golf Tournament at Congressional Country Club in Bethesda, Maryland, we do want to reflect on last weekend's action. Mark Leishman, he gets hot at the right time and fires a 62, and he wins the Travelers Championship. We are delighted to welcome back to our program. He is a prolific writer and author, James Dodson, who we featured this past spring with his brand new book and release, American Triumvirate. And of course, greetings, James, from Fort Worth. And I just have to wonder, how are things in beautiful Southern Pines, North Carolina? Did you finally wrap up that book tour? Because I'm sure it was fast and furious.
Yeah, I did. And I almost came back to Fort Worth last week to thing for the Golf Channel on this book. And I got, they did it at the Greenbrier instead, which is, I think, the next tournament up after the AT&T. And I was just there. That's an exciting tournament that has grown. I think what's nice about the tour right now is you're seeing a lot of wonderful kind of new tournaments. Connecticut or the TPC, the one there, the Travelers, is not a new tournament, but they've kind of restyled it. They called it the Travelers a few years ago, and it's still at the TPC River Highlands, and it's a wonderful place. It's beautiful, and it's been a launch pad for a lot of the younger players, like Bubba Watson, who I think won his first career there, a tour event a few years ago there. And you've seen a whole bunch of these young guys come out of places like that. The Greenbrier, Greensboro is another one, a very famous old tournament that Snead, Hogan, and Nelson all won, and goes back to, I think it's the third or fourth oldest on the tour stop. And a few years ago, the Wyndham came in and took it over, kind of like the Travelers did the one up in Connecticut. So it's a nice time for golf. You're seeing a lot of young players who have loads of talent, as this latest young winner, who I don't know a lot about, obviously displays. You shoot a 62 on that course, you on a Sunday, you clearly have the chops. And so I think it's a very exciting time in golf, frankly. And it's going to be fun to watch as it goes along, because they're gaining so much confidence these days, and you're seeing a lot of the older players even sort of stumble. I mean, even Tiger at the Open, and these guys are not afraid of anybody. They go out and shoot a 62 in a heartbeat on a final day and light it up.
Yeah, that's incredible. As we had said earlier, Mark Leishman fires that 62. But as you were just referencing, some of these newer tournaments, the Travelers Championship, and then all these new players, there's so many talented young golfers out there. I mean, here, Mark Leishman, he's only 28 years old, not even 30 years old. And as you'd said, you know, we don't know a whole lot about him, but there is just some tremendous up-and-coming talent that we're going to enjoy over the next 10 to 15 years, James.
You're right. And, you know, it's funny. Last summer, I was in Greensboro, where I grew up. They asked me to sort of help them reshape or project their image as the new Wyndham. I mean, as I say, this is a tournament that's been around. Its 75th anniversary is coming up. It's a lot like the Colonial. It's actually even older than the Colonial. And Jason Duff, I had dinner with Jason Duffner, who won his first tournament there. This is a tournament where Seve Ballesteros won his first tournament. And if you go look at a lot of these young players go to these events like the Travelers, like the Greenbrier coming up in a week or so. That was an old tournament that died for about 25 years and then 30 years, and then they brought it back. They just restarted it again. And the Greenbrier is under new management, and they've completely redone the hotel, and it's beautiful. And it's the play. They really have created an excitement. The tour's done a great job, I think, of kind of encouraging these newer tournaments, or these reworked tournaments, and the players are flocking to them. So anyway, I had dinner with Jason Duffner last year. Now, Jason Duffner's 33 years old. I mean, he's a year younger than Tiger, 2 years younger than Tiger. And he just won his first tournament. And now, suddenly, he's one of the hottest players of the year in golf. I mean, he's won, I think, he's won back-to-back down there. And you know, he's remarkable. He's this calm, got the maturity. Although he won my heart when I asked him at dinner, I said something about how he fared the first couple years out of college. He played at Auburn, and I think he told me something about living in his fraternity house for the first year. You're kind of like a guy that does that. And he was so calm and easygoing. He's paying his dues, and a lot of those guys are really hungry, and I think they're seeing, with Tiger kind of on the sidelines and looking very human for the first time in 12 or 15 years, I think you're going to see the door is wide open to a bunch of new, interesting young players who who, as I say, have kind of grown up with a stick in their hands, and they don't feel any intimidation at all. And that's going to be really fun to watch.
You know, James, you highlight your conversation with Jason and just the calm, the maturity, and just the hunger. And it kind of reminds me of listening to Mark Leishman after he won the 2012 Travelers Championship and, as I said, fired that 62. He was almost, it seemed like he was in shock that he really did it. He got his first time, his win on the PGA Tour, like he was still in shock. And that is refreshing to see. I mean, you can't count on anybody and just point to him like, that person's definitely going to, you know, take home the trophy this week.
Well, I think that's a great description, too, refreshing. I personally feel like golf became a one-man event over about a 12- or 15-year period, and I know a lot of the players did. I know several of them. I'm sort of Ernie Els North generation, and no, those guys felt like the media, especially, just fixated on one guy, and they did. There were commercial reasons for doing it, and he certainly was enormously talented. But it sucked all the oxygen out of the room, and Phil Mickelson 12 years ago told me out in Arizona, he said, you know, the one problem with the fact that it's Tiger all the time is it creates a mindset for players that you're just not good enough to win. You're going to be playing for second. And I hadn't thought about it, but, you know, as I watched it all unfold, he was absolutely right. I think players kind of got, you know, you hear every day, every minute, this deification of this guy who's a phenomenal player. He is a phenomenal player, but, I mean, certainly he's proved to have his feet of clay as much as anybody else, and his fucking grace has been well chronicled, or will be eventually, and it's very sad, but the fact is, I think God, what you see in the last 3 years is this wonderful kind of return to the values of the game that I have to go with are really created from Arnold Palmer to the end of Greg Norman's reign, or Nick Faldo's last major, sort of 1960 to 1996, when Fowler won his last major. And you saw these players that were amazingly talented, champions, great duels, Watson and Nicklaus at Turnberry, and of course Nicklaus winning at the Masters in 86. Yeah, I think that value system is very much alive in the form of Webb Simpson and Rory McIlroy and Ricky Foster, all these kids wearing bright orange, little kids copying. You didn't see that stuff until recently. And the best part of watching these guys play, and just what you described about the new winner of the Travelers, is you see a visible joy with them. It does sort of stun them. I mean, this is a big deal in their lives. They don't take, you know, this is something that has been missing from golf, and that is watching the real pleasure of winning a championship. And they don't take it for granted. I mean, Roy McIlroy, when he broke through in Charlotte a few years ago, before he won U.S. Opens, was walking up the fairway crying. You know, I mean, you see tears suddenly. You see little joy. That golf is the most intimate social game on earth, except maybe arm wrestling. it's a great game for making friends. The reason the game boomed between, say, 1960 when Arnold won the second major and had his biggest year at Masters in the Open in 96, was because these players all felt very human and approachable. Some of them had homemade swings. Most of them didn't have gurus and swing teachers. They were very human guys. They came out of country clubs and old clubs and driving ranges. And they became stars, and some of them were crusty, and most of them were really glad to be there. And you see these wonderful, wonderful champions happening, and I think that we're sort of on the cusp of a new golden age. I really believe that. You know, Tiger's always going to be a threat. It's always going to be great when he's in the contention because it just ramps it up even more. But you're going to have all these guys. I mean, all the South Africans. How do you not like Louis Oosthuizen? You know, the guy makes a double eagle at the Masters this year and tosses the ball to the gallery.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
So many young champions, and we just, you know, appreciate their love for the game. And we were having this discussion with my first guest on our program. We were talking about Bubba Watson and Webb Simpson, some of these younger players, and the fact that Webb Simpson, he has opted to not play in the British Open. You know, he wants to be at home with his family as he and his wife are expecting their second child. Bubba Watson, of course, won the Masters, and he chose not to play for 1 month. And I had just shared with our earlier guest, you know, I was listening to a program on satellite radio, and they were critical of the choices that Bubba and Webb are making. They feel like, you know, they have an obligation to the game. They shouldn't be taking time off. What's your take on that?
I would say I'm 90 degrees or 180 degrees opposite of that. In fact, you know, Arnold will tell you there were tournaments he played in he really wished he hadn't, that he took time away from winning and his two baby girls, and he regrets it. Listen, the Tiger mentality has infected much of, and I charted to, and I hope this doesn't rile anybody, but or if it does, so be it, kind of 40 and younger, or maybe 35 and younger, adore the Tiger Woods ethics. It's all about money. It's all about power. It's all about position. It's all about he's the best in the world. The people who are 35 and older, and I've done, I don't know, 75 club nights and speeches in the past 2 years on this subject and for my books and various other things about the game, and it breaks down. I've had one guy who was a Tiger Woods nut and said, oh, if he leaves the game will die. Well, the game is not going to die. And when I see a web and saying, you know, I'd rather go home and be there when my child is born. You're seeing that in a variety, a majority of these young players. It's because they have their priorities straight.
Absolutely.
This is a game of values. It's a game of tradition. I don't get the feeling Tiger Woods cares too much about the traditions of the game of golf. I think he cares about Tiger Woods, and that's fine. For what he is and how he's been created, perfect. He is absolutely unique, and he's certainly probably the most talented to ever play the game. What I would tell you is, though, I think watching these young players make a decision like Webb Simpson, and in fairness, his parents live in Raleigh and his grandparents live here in Pinehurst. I know them. But on a national radio show 3 weeks ago, I was asked who my choice was, and I think Webb Simpson will probably win the Open. Now, I said that partly because I wanted him to, but partly because he is a
wow. Look at that! Yeah,
his mother told me that he's obsessed with his Panera coffee card. That he can't. This is a guy who's made $1 billion in the last year and a half, but everywhere he goes, he has to make sure his Panera card is punched to get a free coffee. that's a wonderful quality. That's a nice little window into this guy's character. I think this is why I say Jason Duffner. You got to love this guy. He doesn't betray a lot when he's playing, but he's so relaxed and so easygoing and such a pleasant person. They sign autographs. I've stood at the Open and watched Ernie Els, for instance, sign autographs for years and really give something to the fans. During the Tiger reign, a lot of players quit doing that. They wanted to be like Tiger, and now they want to be like Webb. And I say, bravo and bring it on. That's what golf needs.
We are quickly running out of time with James Dotson. He is the author of American Triumvirate and the editor of the Pine Straw Magazine. I look forward to checking out your magazine when we're up in Pinehurst, North Carolina. Hey, you know, a couple times you have talked about Ernie Els. I think his belief is back. He's got that confidence, and he truly is one of the nicest guys on the tour. Right, James?
He really is. I mean, I have interviewed him over the years, the way he looks at the game and you know, you look at this new generation of South Africans, there's at least five or six of them who have nearly won the Masters and the Opens. They're all his protégés, and he was a protégé of, you know, Gary Player. These are guys that feel like this game is somehow larger than one person, that it is, you never know who's going to win round to round or week to week, and it is a game that sort of teaches humility and friendship and gives us many, many gifts. And I think that's why, yeah, I do have a soft spot for Ernie. I was actually hoping, I'm glad and delighted Webb won, but I sure wanted Ernie to win. I thought it would have been great for golf. Just like the Bubba shot at the Masters did more for golf than anything, I think, since Jack Nicklaus's win in 86. And I think he's an original. And these are guys who understand that golf is not, as Arnold once said to me, this is not about national defense. This is a game. And it's important to keep that in perspective. There's always going to be another tournament and another championship, and yet they don't get those moments back with their kids. And, oh, by the way, I wish your young one the best of luck when he's at the tournament here in Pinehurst in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much, James. And tell all of our listeners where they can go and get a copy of your book, because it went to 3 printings. Is that right? I mean, and we've got this documentary coming up on the Golf Channel.
It is. It's coming out in the 3rd printing. It's at Barnes & Noble and all the sort of bookstores around. And failing that, they can go on my website and jamesdodsonauthor.com and shoot me a line, and I'll hook them up with the directly with somebody who can send them a book, and I'll sign it.
Thank you, James, and congratulations on your outstanding work. We look forward to talking to you again real soon. We're going to step aside. Much more Straight Ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Stay close. Hi, folks. Elissa Walker-Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
Elissa Walker-Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to our show. And especially, you know, during the summer months, we always enjoy taking time for a good book review. And when the publisher of our next guest contacted me, I knew right away this was a book I wanted to feature on our program because as a former collegiate athlete and now covering sports, I've always been fascinated with sports psychology and what separates good athletes from great ones and how to have consistency with your game and how do you improve your sports performance. So we are so delighted to welcome in Garrett Kramer. He is the author of his brand new book. It is titled Still Power, Excellence with Ease in Sports and Life. And welcome to our program, Garrett. It's your first time on our show.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Lisa. Appreciate it.
We've got a lot of stuff that I want to talk about with your brand new book titled Still Power, but I always, as a courtesy, when we have authors, sports authors on our program, I always want to find out what is the inspiration behind your book and putting it together. And so that's my first question off, Garrett, is what was the inspiration behind this book and how you want to provide that helping hand to those athletes out there?
Well, I run a company here in New Jersey, Alyssa, called InterSports, and it wasn't my first job. I was a college hockey player, a good amateur golfer, and then I was a high school hockey coach for years. But I had a job doing all of that. I was in the real estate business. But about 20 years ago now, I started to see that most parents of the high school athletes I coached or we competed against, they were under the notion, and the misguided notion actually, if you put your son or daughter into sports, they would automatically become disciplined or develop leadership skills or perseverance or diligence, et cetera. So sports would be the catalyst for all these characteristics that they wanted to see in their children. But that just wasn't happening. That wasn't happening at all. And in fact, if you take a closer look at collegiate sports, professional sports, we see athletes who are clearly excelling at the highest level. And we look at those athletes' behavior, we'll see across the board, we'll see players struggling. So clearly what occurred to me 17 years ago and why I started InterSports was there was a disconnect between what people thought sports was supposed to do and what was actually happening. So I decided, let me take a closer look and let me find out why that was. Now, that was the reason I started InterSports. And the reason I wrote Still Power was to just kind of encapsulate my experience working with athletes at the highest level over the last 17 years and to point readers in a different direction than I think they're considering currently. And that direction is this. If you were to interview great athletes at their finest moment and ask them to describe their feelings or their feeling state, they'll use words like, I wasn't thinking, it came out of nowhere, I wasn't grinding, I wasn't really trying, I just can't describe how it happened. So they'll describe a state of no thought, what we commonly call the zone. No thought, acting by instincts in freedom, pure freedom. Yet, when athletes are not in that state, what parents and teachers and coaches and sports psychologists commonly do is they throw thought at it. So they throw strategies, techniques, and all these external coping mechanisms at the athlete. So they're trying to, athletes are clearly experiencing a state of no thought, yet in order to get to the zone, these specialists are throwing thought right at the athlete. So what would result there is you take the athlete's inner wisdom, you mix it with the external strategy, and what you would get is bound up thinking and thus errant behavior. And in this book, I'm pointing people to what's happening inside the athlete and then provide solutions and how we can get to a better state of mind and thus better, more success on the field and more contentment off of it.
And Gary, I'd love for you to share with our listeners how you do, you know, achieve that optimum mental performance, the ability, as you're talking about, to perform freely, you know, just that unbounded effort. You reference that and talk about that in the book. And I think many times, you know, we have a son that's a junior golfer, and I see this with parents, even out at the driving range. They're working with their sons, and, you know, the parents are, you know, talking so much about technique and all these different things. And I just want to say, if you will back off and allow them to just have that freedom and get in their own state of mind, make their own decisions, they will be able to execute.
Exactly. So how it works, just let's, I know you have a son around 10 who's a golfer, as you said.
Yes.
But go back to when he was around 2. And if you want proof to how the human mind works, look at young children like your son when he was 2. Like all 2-year-olds, the terrible 2s, those young children are prone temper tantrums or meltdown. Sometimes they just freak out, no holds barred. We all saw that in my children. You did the same thing. But with no skill, no technique, with no how-to, he snaps right out of it, right back to the zone, like it never happened. And the parents look at that young boy or girl like, oh, what was he? They were just freaking out 2 seconds ago. Now look at them. Well, that's the proof. In my mind, that's the proof that when we're in a low state, when our state of mind is low, left alone, it will regulate back to consciousness, back to freedom, and you will find the answers, which is exactly what you just described. So we're out there stepping on the gas pedal when our tires are in mud. We're trying to fight our way out, use willpower to get out of the low. And in this book, I'm suggesting that still power, understanding how the system works, how the human mind works, is a better alternative than trying to do something when you're low.
Gary Kramer is with us just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. His new book that is out, it is titled Still Power, Excellence with Ease in Sports and in Life. And I think this is a great read if you are an athlete, whether high school, collegiate. But also, you know, what I took away from this is a great read for coaches.
Absolutely. Coaches, unfortunately, are so concerned with what comes out of their mouth, as opposed to the state of mind from which the words are spoken. So players, students, even at the pro level this applies, they don't really care. I mean, go back to your college playing days. You don't really care about the words that the coach says. You care about if those words are said from a perspective of judgment or insecurity or ego versus love, understanding, compassion. So the coach could say the most educated X's and O's kind of game plan. He could, you know, lay it out in front of the team. He or she could lay it out in front of the team. But if those words aren't spoken from a high state of mind, the team will not profit. If no matter what the coach says from a perspective of inspiration or as love, as I said, that coach, that team is going to kick butt on the field or on the court or on the course. And that's what I'm saying. Now, we all see that. We see some coaches that kind of, to the public, they look like they don't know the X's and O's of the game. Like, and we look at them, we wonder, how is that guy or gal being successful? They don't even know the game well. You know, Joe Torre is someone that kind of pops into my mind like that. We didn't think when he was coaching the Yankees that he was the best X's and O's type of coach. Yet, Torre understood that he would address his team based on his mindset. So if he found himself in a low state of mind, he kind of pulled back, didn't say much. If he found himself in a high state of mind, he knew he'd automatically be respecting his players. Because when we're in a high state of mind, respect is a byproduct. So Joe Torre knew it was about him. It didn't matter about what the players were doing. He acted based on his state of mind in the moment, and he let that guide him as opposed to the players' behavior, what they were doing. He didn't worry about that. He looked within himself for the right time to address his team. Thus, again, he addressed his team most of the time from a perspective of love and respect.
Here we are flat out of time. Of course, the title of Garrett Kremer's brand new book is titled Still Power, The Inner Source for Excellence in Sports and in Life. And we want to encourage you to go to his website. That is GarrettKremer.com. And congratulations on this. And you hang on the line. I want to talk to you for a few more minutes. Okay, Garrett?
Okay, you bet. Thanks, Melissa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead with the fastest hour in radio. We will be right back.